Hey everyone, and welcome back to The Deep Dive.
Great to be here.
Today we're really plunging headfirst into something pretty fundamental, I think, for understanding a lot of the tech world right now.
Yeah, definitely.
It's this whole idea of decentralization, the promise versus, well, the actual reality.
Right. It's the concept that launched, countless projects, captured so many imaginations. But what if that dream, that ideal, is actually, harder to really achieve than the marketing materials might suggest?
That's exactly the challenging question we're tackling. We're basing this deep dive on a specific piece, an article from Blockrora.com called The Illusion of Decentralization, the Centralization Inevitability Thesis. You can think of this as a kind of Rora signal, trying to cut through some of the noise and get to the heart of what this article is arguing.
And it's a pretty bold argument. It doesn't just sort of question the current state of things, how decentralized systems are now.
Yeah.
It argues there's this powerful, almost inherent pull towards centralization.
Like it's baked in somehow.
Yeah, baked into the very nature of building complex systems that actually work and get used by lots of people.
Okay, so our mission here is to really unpack that argument. We want to explore why this Blockrora article suggests genuine, sustainable decentralization might be, well, an unstable illusion.
We'll look at the technical stuff, the sort of philosophical angles, the practical side of things,
mm-hmm.
all based on what the source lays out.
And ultimately, it forces us to ask, like the article does, is this whole movement really building a brave new world of distributed power? Or
are we maybe just creating, perhaps without even realizing it, new forms of centralized control that are just maybe more opaque, harder to see, hiding under this banner of decentralization?
That's a heavy question. Okay, let's unpack this.
They do it.
The article kicks off with this core idea, the centralization inevitability thesis. So what exactly is this thesis getting at?
Well, what's really fascinating, I think, is the article's stance that this isn't just some bug, something we can just fix with a patch update.
Yeah.
It suggests that for any system, any decentralized system, to become truly useful, widespread, scalable, it seems to face this constant gravitational pull.
A pull towards centralization.
Exactly. Driven by things like the need for efficiency, economic incentives, even just the basic challenges of human coordination. It argues power and influence tend to concentrate over time, almost regardless of how decentralized the starting design was.
Huh. So the very things that make a system successful, like getting big, working efficiently, being easy for people to use, those are the things pushing it away from being purely decentralized. That feels like a major paradox.
It really does. And proponents, they often focus so much on the technical architecture, the code, the consensus rules, the distributed ledger itself.
Yeah, the nuts and bolts.
Right. But the article argues they might be underestimating or maybe just overlooking these real-world pressures that kind of bend that ideal out of shape.
Like what kind of pressures?
Things like network effects, where bigger players just naturally get bigger,
mm-hmm.
or the simple practicalities of how you actually evolve the protocol, how you upgrade it, and, the quiet but very real influence wielded by the core development teams or the big token holders.
Okay, that makes sense. If the real world pushes back like that, let's dig into some of the specific technical arguments the article brings up. It mentions how even the mechanisms designed for decentralization, like, say, consensus algorithms, tend to show this concentration.
They absolutely do. I mean, take proof of work. The original dream was kind of one CPU, one vote, right?
Yes.
Simple.
Yeah, very democratic sounding.
But the reality pretty quickly turned into this massive arms race for computing power that led directly to the huge mining pools we see today.
Right, where just a few big pools control a massive slice of the network's power.
Exactly. And major networks like Bitcoin, a handful of dominant pools have a significant chunk of the hash power. The core insight the article draws here is that even when consensus is based on resources, it still tends towards economies of scale, which concentrates power.
And proof of stake. That's often talked about as the greener, maybe more decentralized alternative. Does the article say it escapes this?
Nope, not according to this piece. It argues proof of stake often just swaps one concentration point for another, moving from computing power to, well, capital, money.
How so?
Think about the big players. Large crypto exchanges, institutional investors, setting up staking operations, these staking as a service companies, capital tends to attract more capital, right? So staking power naturally starts accumulating in fewer and fewer hands. The challenge, the article points out, is that the economic incentives just make it incredibly difficult to keep a truly diverse, widely distributed set of validators running the network over the long haul.
Okay, so consensus mechanisms face this pull. What about the actual development? You know, how the network's code gets written, how it evolves, how upgrades happen?
Yeah, this is another key area. The article highlights the emergence of what it calls de facto gatekeepers.
Gatekeepers, even in open source.
Yeah. Well, yes. While many projects are technically open source, the really deep, complex work on the core protocol, that's usually driven by small, highly specialized teams.
Right, the core devs.
Exactly. Often funded by specific foundations or parent companies. They have the unique technical know-how. They're so deep in the code base that they effectively become the key decision makers guiding where the protocol goes next.
But what about all the community governance stuff? You know, on-chain voting, DAOs, things like that. Aren't they supposed to distribute that decision-making power?
The article is, let's say, pretty critical on this point. It suggests these mechanisms often run into problems like voter apathy, nobody votes. Or they can be manipulated by well-organized groups or simply dominated by a few whales with huge token holdings.
Yeah, I've definitely seen discussions about low voter turnout or how a few big players can swing a vote in some DAOs that seems to fit.
It does. So the narrative you hear, the one about truly leaderless, perfectly distributed control over network upgrades, the article argues that often doesn't quite match the messy reality of how important decisions actually get made and pushed through.
Mm.
The insight there is that just having formal decentralization on paper, like a voting mechanism, doesn't automatically mean you get actual decentralized power or influence in practice.
Interesting. And what about just, you know, participating as a regular user, like running your own node to verify things yourself?
Yes, the full node issue. That's supposed to be the gold standard, right? Running your own node means you can independently verify every transaction. You don't have to trust anyone else.
Yeah.
But the article points out that for many major networks, running a full node has become really technically complex, and it requires significant resources, storage, bandwidth, computing power.
More than the average person has or wants to deal with.
Pretty much. So what happens? Many users end up relying on centralized third-party providers, companies like Infura or Alchemy, just to access blockchain data or submit transactions.
So you're outsourcing that crucial trust and verification layer
right
back to a centralized intermediary.
Exactly. You're trying to use a decentralized system, but you often end up needing to touch these centralized points, maybe without even fully realizing it.
Okay, wow. What about the big push to make these systems faster, cheaper, just easier to use? You know, the all scalability and user experience demand.
This, according to the article, might be the single biggest centralizing pressure point of all.
Really? Why is that?
Because many of the solutions designed to achieve that speed and lower cost, things like layer two scaling solutions or sidechains, often work by introducing new components that, frankly, have greater degrees of centralization or rely on different, sometimes weaker trust assumptions.
So you trade off some decentralization for performance.
That's often the trade-off, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And even connecting different decentralized chains together frequently relies on bridges. These bridges themselves can become huge central points of failure or control. And unfortunately, as we've seen, they've also proven to be major targets for exploits.
So the argument the article is making seems to be that almost every technical step you take towards making these systems usable for more people or perform better, it kind of forces you to chip away at that pure decentralization ideal.
That's the stark trade-off it really highlights, yes.
Right.
As systems get more performant, more user-friendly, ready for a mainstream audience, they seem to drift further and further away from that initial, maybe maximalist, decentralized vision.
It raises a really critical question then, one the article forces us to confront. Are mass adoption and maximum technical decentralization actually fundamentally incompatible goals?
That's the question it leaves hanging, and it's a tough one.
It is. Okay, that's a powerful set of technical arguments. But the article also talks about philosophical cracks. What does it mean by that? Cracks in the foundation of the whole decentralization idea.
Yeah, this part gets more into the core beliefs, the sort of ideology underpinning the space. And a major one it targets is this idea of trustlessness.
Trustlessness?
Yeah.
The idea that code and crypto mean you don't need to trust people?
Exactly. Code is law, the machines handle it, no messy human trust needed. The article argues this might actually be based on a fundamental misunderstanding of what trust really is and the role it plays in any complex system, especially involving humans.
How does it misunderstand trust, according to the article?
Well, it suggests that trust isn't just about, you know, programmatic assurance, will this smart contract execute exactly as the code says?
Okay.
It's also a crucial social element. It's necessary for things like cooperation, coordinating actions, and especially for dealing with risks or situations that codes simply cannot anticipate or fully govern. Unexpected events happen.
Right. Code can't predict everything.
Precisely. So the insight here is that trying to eliminate human trust entirely often doesn't actually eliminate it. It just shifts it.
It shifts it where?
Sometimes from familiar institutions, maybe regulated ones, to, well, less visible developers or opaque governance structures behind the scenes. Or sometimes it shifts to an almost naive faith in the supposed perfection of code that, let's be honest, very few people truly understand.
Is that shift really better for the average person? Trading known trust assumptions for unknown ones.
That's the question the article poses. It feels like you might be trading one form of trust, or maybe mistrust, for another one that's potentially less transparent and definitely less accountable.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the article also touches on what it sees as a kind of philosophical naivety about human nature itself.
How so?
Well, this romantic ideal you sometimes hear perfectly harmonious, leaderless communities just spontaneously coordinating through pure code.
Yeah.
It often clashes pretty hard with the historical reality of how human groups actually function, especially large, diverse ones. They tend to need leadership, ways to delegate tasks, establish processes to handle disagreements or disputes, things that pure, structureless decentralization really struggles to provide effectively.
So trying to avoid having explicit power structures doesn't actually make power disappear.
The article strongly suggests it just makes power informal, less visible, and crucially, less accountable. It even brings up this concept from political science, the tyranny of structurelessness.
The tyranny of structurelessness, what's that?
It's the idea that when you don't have formal structures or hierarchies, influence doesn't just vanish. It can easily get captured by those who have the most resources, or who shout the loudest, or have the most technical expertise, or just simply have the most free time to dedicate to the project.
Which can end up being the opposite of the goal of distributing power fairly, right?
Exactly. It can directly contradict that goal.
And there was one more philosophical crack the article mentioned, something about responsibility.
Yes, the diffusion of responsibility. This is a big one. In a world where the mantra is often, code is law, who is actually accountable when something goes wrong?
Like a hack or an exploit.
Yeah, or even just a design flaw. If a smart contract executes exactly as it was written, but it leads to massive user losses because of an unforeseen exploit, or a bad design choice, or even just weird external market conditions, who do you hold responsible? The decentralized ideal often spreads that responsibility so thinly across potentially anonymous developers, thousands of token holders, various infrastructure providers, that no single person or entity can be meaningfully held liable.
And for you, the end user, that basically means you're navigating these systems, potentially taking on significant risks.
Often with no clear path for help or compensation if things go sideways.
Yeah.
It creates a kind of moral hazard, doesn't it? And raises really deep questions about how we govern these powerful new technologies when the prevailing philosophy seems to prioritize this idea of algorithmic purity over fundamental human needs like accountability or having ways to fix things or get restitution.
So putting it all together, the article paints this pretty compelling picture. You've got these persistent technical pressures pulling towards centralization, and these fundamental philosophical blind spots maybe weakening the foundations. What does this illusory decentralization, as the article calls it, actually mean in the real world for people using these systems?
Well, the ramifications are pretty significant, and they touch a lot of areas. For just the average user, that initial promise of having absolute control of being your own bank, it can start to feel increasingly hollow.
How so?
You might find that even though you think you're interacting with a decentralized app, your actual experience is heavily shaped by decisions made by a few large token holders in a governance vote you didn't participate in. Or you're reliant on a centralized website front end to even access the thing. Or the underlying infrastructure you're hitting isn't really that distributed.
Right.
And when things go wrong, like a bridge gets hacked and funds disappear, or there's a big fight over a governance vote, or a key service provider has an outage, the lack of clear accountability often leaves you, the user, kind of stranded.
Exposed to new kinds of risks.
Exactly. New risks, often with a much less recourse compared to the traditional systems we're used to, for all their flaws.
It definitely makes those claims of transparency feel a bit less meaningful if you can't easily figure out who's actually pulling the levers or who you could even complain to.
Right. And then for the broader ecosystem, especially thinking about decentralized finance, DeFi, the article argues this presents a potential systemic risk. Yeah. If the underlying protocols and the infrastructure they run on aren't truly as decentralized and therefore maybe not as resilient or censorship resistant as people assume or as advertised, well, then the whole financial system being built on top might be on much shakier ground than we think.
Mm-hmm.
And regulatory bodies, you know, they might initially scratch their heads about how to deal with supposedly leaderless entities, but the article suggests they might actually find it surprisingly easy to identify and lean on these emergent points of control. The core teams, the foundations, the major infrastructure providers that the thesis describes.
Which could kind of undermine the whole premise of DeFi being this completely separate, robust alternative to traditional finance, couldn't it?
Precisely. The dream of creating systems immune to the single points of failure or political pressures of the old world could, the article warns, just be replaced by new, maybe less understood, and potentially even more brittle points of failure and control.
And what about security? The article suggested this illusion of decentralization could be particularly dangerous from a security standpoint. Why is that?
Yeah, this is a critical insight it offers, especially comparing it to traditional systems. Think about it. Overtly centralized systems, like a bank's IT system, have clear, known attack surfaces. We know where the servers are, who's responsible.
Right, the weak points are somewhat known.
But a system that looks decentralized to the user but secretly harbors these hidden or emergent centralities, that could be more dangerous.
Hidden centralities like what?
Things like critical multi-sig keys, those digital signatures needed to control vital contract upgrades, or manage treasury funds maybe being controlled by just a tiny, potentially anonymous team.
Mm-hmm.
Or a heavy reliance on just one or two key API providers for data. Or governance processes that have effectively been captured by insiders.
Okay.
These might present more insidious, harder to spot, and harder to defend attack surfaces. Users might operate under a false sense of security, right? They're focused on the distributed ledger, assuming everything's spread out while overlooking these concentrated control points sitting just above it.
Because you assume it's decentralized, you're not even looking for those centralized weak spots that could be exploited.
Exactly. Plus, you have this tension. The code is law ethos, combined with actual centralization in development, could mean that if vulnerabilities are found, they might either be potentially exploited by those central actors themselves, or conversely, be incredibly difficult to fix quickly across the whole network because distributed governance can be slow or just ineffective at making urgent decisions.
Wow. Okay. So if the article's core argument holds water, if true, maximalist decentralization is this really elusive, maybe even unstable goal.
Mm-hmm.
What does it suggest as a more realistic path forward? Where does the industry go from here?
It really calls for a fundamental reevaluation, I think. A shift in perspective about what we're actually trying to achieve. The debate, the article strongly suggests, needs to move beyond this simplistic binary choice, either purely centralized or purely decentralized, nothing in between.
Because that pure ideal might not be achievable or even desirable in practice.
Exactly. If chasing that maximalist ideal results in systems that are unstable, unusable for most people, or just don't deliver on their core promises in the real world, then maybe we're pursuing an ideological phantom.
You know, so it's not saying decentralization itself offers no benefits at all.
No, not at all. But it's urging for much more pragmatism.
Okay.
The article seems to suggest that a more valuable path might involve building systems that are, perhaps, more transparently and accountably centralized in key areas than the legacy systems we have now.
Interesting. So acknowledging centralization, but making it accountable.
Yes. Or maybe developing hybrid models, systems that strategically use decentralization where it offers genuine proven advantages, maybe censorship resistance for basic data layers, or securing asset transfers while openly acknowledging and building accountable structures around the operational layers that face those seemingly inevitable centralizing pressures we talked about.
So it's about being honest, really. Being honest about that gravitational pull towards concentration that seems to affect any system trying to be useful and widespread,
yeah.
And then designing around it in a way that's still hopefully a net improvement over what existed before.
That really is the key takeaway, I think. The article contends that this pull towards various kinds of centralization and development, infrastructure, capital, governance, It's a powerful, persistent force for any system that wants real utility and scale.
And the romantic ideal often bumps up against those hard, pragmatic demands.
Exactly. Demands for efficiency, for scalability, and yes, for accountable human oversight when things inevitably go wrong.
Which brings us right back around to the core message of this Blockroar article we've been discussing. This centralization inevitability thesis. It's not just saying things are a bit centralized now. It's proposing a theory that this strong, persistent pull fundamentally challenges whether pure decentralization is even feasible or maintainable in systems that actually get widely used are useful.
And the main drivers we unpacked were those technical pressures, right? Mm-hmm. The concentration in consensus, the developer gatekeepers, node complexity, the scaling demands, combined with those philosophical blind spots the article points to. That maybe oversimplified view of trust, perhaps a bit of naivety about human coordination needs, and that big problem of diffused responsibility leaving users kind of exposed.
Yeah. The article really does call for a major reevaluation. It's urging the whole conversation to shift away from just centralized versus decentralized as a simple on-off switch.
Right. To a much more nuanced discussion about, okay, what degrees of decentralization are possible, what types are actually beneficial for specific purposes, and how can we build transparently, build accountably around those centralizing tendencies that the article argues are pretty much inevitable if you want success.
Absolutely. So thinking about this, for you listening, whether you're a user of DeFi, maybe an investor looking at projects, or just someone interested in where this tech is going, how does this perspective change how you view the claims you hear? What does decentralization really mean to you after considering this argument?
It certainly gives you a different lens, doesn't it? A different set of questions to ask when you hear a project described using those terms.
It does.
And maybe, drawing directly from a closing thought in the article, here's something for you to mull over.
Yeah.
If that romantic ideal of pure, absolute decentralization is, as the article suggests, maybe a fragile castle built on sand, what level of practically sustainable and genuinely beneficial decentralization is actually possible in the real world? And maybe more importantly, given those powerful centralizing forces the article highlights, how should the industry build? How should we design systems to be as transparent and accountable as possible around those points of concentration so that we can actually salvage lasting value and positive impact from this whole massive technological experiment?
That's definitely plenty to consider. And that's all the time we have for this deep dive into Blockroar's The Illusion of Decentralization.
We hope this exploration, this Rora Signal deep dive, has given you some valuable insights, maybe some challenging ones too, into a really critical debate shaping the future.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, everyone.
See you next time on The Deep Dive.